Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
Man, let's give it up for Joel, because I guess we both thought that over the weekend you would be able to rest up a little bit, be in a better condition, but the voice is still sounding rough. You're pushing through, though.
I'm thinking...
You're a soldier over there, man. Do it for the sake of personal finance.
Remember that one guy who played with like a broken leg in the Super Bowl? That's what I feel like right now. That's what I feel like. This is that version of podcasting. It's actually nothing close to that.
I was going to let you say that.
I don't think that highly of myself, but yeah.
Well, you are. I mean, you're dialing it up a little bit here for the actual recording, but yeah, dude, you've been in rough shape, so let's get this bad boy recorded, get you home, maybe get yourself a little nap this afternoon.
There we go. All right. And I hate going to the doctors. I went.
Yeah.
I got some meds, so I'm hoping that's going to get me on the right path. So
yeah, let's hope so, man. But yes, this is an Ask How to Money Monday episode, and we've got multiple topics to get to. We're going to talk about the rule of 55, what that's all about and how it pertains to early retirement. Another listener is wondering whether or not it's okay for him to put 5% down when it comes to purchasing a home. And another listener has a daughter that's growing up. She is transitioning into adulthood. He wanted to pick our brains there. So we'll talk about that plus more on today's episode, buddy.
All right, before, I just want to give one quick tip. And we've talked about this before on the show, but there is a law in Europe that basically forces airlines to compensate you if your flight's delayed. And this is something, Matt, for some reason, it feels like it's on nobody's radar. But my mother-in-law told me a few weeks ago they'd gone to Scotland, actually not too long after you and I went this year.
Oh,
and okay. They had a great time.
But you said something about a mother. Okay, sorry, dude. Keep going.
Oh, good. So their return flight was delayed like 4 hours or something like that. And that exceeds the amount of time they're able to delay without having to pay you money. And I was
snap.
Have you guys filed for EU261?
EU261.
She was like, no.
Sounds like some sort of radioactive isotope.
That's right.
But in fact, this means money in your pocket.
Yeah. She was like, what do I do? And so I just sent her the link. And she texted me over the Christmas break. And she said she got almost $1,500 back.
Nice.
Thanks to that delay. So it's like,
that's huge.
You're almost like praying to be delayed a little bit so that you can get this compensation.
You're like, I wouldn't mind. I mean, because most of the time you're sitting there, I feel like an hour or two delay is pretty typical. So it's like, okay, maybe another couple hours, and then we almost get the whole cost of the ticket refunded.
Right.
That's insane.
It's like, please, let's cross that threshold so we can get a decent chunk of money back in our wallets.
Yeah. There's some good sites out there. We'll link to those there in the show notes. That way, if you want to learn more about this, you know where it is to go, where to learn more about it, and how it is that you can file for that compensation.
We've got no such law here in the States, but Europe does. And even if you're taking a flight, by the way, to Europe or from Europe to the States, those flights basically fall under EU 261 as well.
So, very nice. Yeah. Do you plan on doing, did y'all set any 2024 travel resolutions as far as?
You know, we traveled so hard in 2023, which was great.
Yeah.
I think we're definitely going to, we realized it was the time to take advantage of travel, and we're going to be traveling a little bit less this year. So I think that partly with Emily's school and kind of getting into the working and stuff like that. So I think
maybe we can get some smaller domestic trips in. How about that?
Yeah. Maybe not a big Euro one this year though.
I want to go hiking. I want to do more. Like, I really enjoyed going on that hiking trip with Kate, and it'd be fun for us to do that.
The Camino Santiago in Spain. I'm trying to convince my dad to do that with me. So maybe, just maybe, that'll be
awesome.
Later this year. But
that's something I want to do with my kids.
Yeah.
Like, sort of as like a rite of passage. It's either that or even doing the AT. But the AT is just so much more intense.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to do that, you've got to be a real wilderness person,
right?
Because if you're gonna through hike it, it's months and months.
Well, our friend
versus just like a week, 10 days perhaps, if when you're doing the Camino Santiago.
Yeah. Our mutual friend Chad Carson, he took his girls and they're a little bit older than our kiddo, so but they were in Europe for a year, so it makes sense. Like, they
thought
were in, literally in Spain. So
you better be doing it.
That's right
if you're over there. All right, man, let's quickly introduce the beer you and I are enjoying, and you might only enjoy a very small amount of this beer, we'll see.
Yeah.
But this is A Violent Green. This is a beer by Evergrain, another one that was donated to the show by Rihanna. Thanks again, Rihanna, for sending a bunch our way. We'll share our thoughts at the end of the episode. But this is a listener questions episode, and you too can send your voice memo in and have it answered by Joel and I. At the very least, we'll talk about it. maybe we won't provide you with a perfectly satisfactory answer, but
we'll do our best.
Absolutely, yeah. And we take listener questions every Monday here on the podcast. But let's get to our first one. This is a listener who has a question about the down payment that he has on hand to put towards a house.
Hey guys, Ray here, calling you from Los Angeles. Love the show. Thanks for having me on. My wife and I just recently paid our student loan debt, and we're super excited about that, but it left our savings account almost all the way depleted. We currently rent here and would really rather be paying for a house that we own, especially since rent is so expensive. We both work full-time. We have income from rental property also. Our emergency fund is good. Retirement contributions are maxed, so we're all good there. But we're just having a hard time saving money right now with rent being as high as it is. Currently, we have about a 5% down payment saved for the price that we're looking at. And my question is it worth it to go 5% down, pay the PMI, so that way we can own our house and we can even itemize on our taxes from the interest? Or should we just keep renting, save what we can, and just see how long it takes to save up enough for a 20% down payment? Or last resort, do we sell a rental? We'd rather not, but maybe that's the way to go. Thanks for having me and have a great day.
All right, Ray, thanks so much for your question, man. And seriously, big win paying off that student loan debt. Not having that payment in your life should help you to restore that all-important emergency fund. I think you're going to be able to do it quickly. What a good feeling it is to, I mean, just tens of millions of people in this country, Matt, have overwhelming levels of student loan debt.
Yeah.
Ray is not one of them. So he definitely deserves a high five for that.
He's got that off his back.
Yeah. And I wouldn't consider buying a home, by the way, until you've replenished that. But with one less debt in your life, once you've got that built back up, it just might be the right time to buy that home. So yeah, start focusing on getting that savings back up. You got the e-fund, which is great, but I want you to have more savings on hand than just kind of that bare minimum to cover you in case of emergency.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, he said his savings was depleted. And you know, honestly, maybe what he's talking about, too, is the fact that he had like a stockpile of funds on hand, and he's I'm sure that was a tough sort of question. It's like, do we go ahead and pay off the student loans?
Right.
Or do we keep this fat stack around to be able to put towards a house? They chose to eliminate the student loans. But yeah.
I think that's a prudent choice.
Like, yeah.
But it's not an easy one. And then it leaves you like salivating when you're looking at homes on the internet and you're a little bummed because you feel like you don't have the cash reserves to like pounce.
Exactly. But that being said, I mean, what you're getting at though is the fact that with this payment no longer being in their life, I think Ray is going to be able to rebound really quickly. Faster than he even thinks,
yeah.
And where he's going to be able to have a significant down payment on hand. But right now, what he's asking about is whether or not it's cool to purchase a home with only 5% down. And this is a great question worth taking because I think there are a lot of folks out there in a similar boat. And there's a lot to discuss given the state of the housing market at the moment. But first things first. Let's just talk about homeownership, just generally speaking, because the desire to own a home is great. We're fans of homeownership ourselves, but specifically when folks are financially ready for it. Now, there are some real benefits to it, but those benefits aren't typically going to be financial in nature.
Yeah.
It is true that the average American has the vast majority, the bulk of their net worth tied up in home equity.
That's also something we don't love.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just a forced method of savings for most folks, but it is not what we necessarily want for How to Money listeners. But luckily, Ray isn't the average person. It seems like he's doing a great job on a whole lot of fronts that
yes.
might open up more doors, more options that might be now at his disposal.
Let me highlight those things, right? He's doing a killer job focusing on finances, maxing out retirement accounts. You've got that rental property, which is a great thing to have in your back pocket. I would hold
maybe
on to
even
that.
Multiple rental
yeah,
properties.
Maybe multiples, yeah.
Because like at the end, he said something about worst case scenario, sell a property.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. How many properties do you have on hand?
And ideally,
it's a strong position to be in.
I mean, you don't necessarily want to sell a rental property
nope.
in order to buy the home of your dreams. That's going to impact your future too. But I also get that, hey, maybe if it was that a medium-term investment to help you buy the home that you want, that could be a legitimate option too. But basically, Ray, since you've done a lot of the hard work to funnel large sums of money into crucial investments for your future already, we're okay with you having a smaller down payment set aside. It's not ideal, but it's not unwise. And so if you can afford the payment, and this is an important lifestyle goal for you and your family, given your attention to detail in the rest of your financial life, I feel pretty comfortable with you guys only putting 5% down. No alarm bells are sounding, Matt, for me when I hear Ray say that.
And again, it's because Ray isn't the average American out
yeah.
there with nothing set aside for retirement. He's got a whole lot of other assets.
Yeah, there are a lot of other people who might call in and say, I want to put 5% down. and they might not be in the same overall financial position, and it's a different calculus.
Exactly. Yeah, it is worth mentioning some of the downsides, though, of only putting down 5%, right? You already mentioned PMI, and of course, that's going to make your mortgage payment higher. But by putting down less money, it's likely going to mean that the interest rate that you're going to receive, your mortgage interest rate, may not be quite as good either. That's going to also make your mortgage payment go up. But then just the fact that you're financing more money, right? Like there is going to be,
yeah.
there's a larger principal sum that you're having to finance. And so all three of those things, it kind of makes it feel like you might be paying out the nose a little bit, especially just with interest rates being where they are, to not get the absolute most competitive rate because you're putting down a little bit less. These are all things that you need to take into account before it's like, all right, 5% down. Matt and Joel gave me the thumbs up. Obviously, there are trade-offs, but what we're saying, though, is that those trade-offs might be worth it considering the strong financial position that you're already in.
Yeah.
But another caveat worth mentioning, though, is that when you look at the charts of how much it costs to own versus how much it costs to rent, renting, it looks smarter than basically ever before, given what's happened with home prices and with mortgage rates. So just know that buying that house is totally fine if that's a meaningful goal of yours, but it's just not a slam dunk decision given the current conditions. There's actually an article in the Journal a few weeks back about why buying a home, how it no longer makes sense, and they had just a great chart in there showing rental prices versus the average home
yeah.
price.
And tenants around the country are like, it sucks, I'm paying so much more. But anybody who's trying to buy a home right now, like, oh wait, renting doesn't look that bad.
It hurts even more
yeah.
if you're trying to buy. And especially too, I'm surprised because he mentioned he's out there in LA. The disparity in Southern California where he lives, it's even more extreme
yeah.
than the rest of the country. And so I think it's at least worth considering some of these different market conditions before you keep pursuing the route of home ownership.
You know, home buying is very much a personal thing. And it's like, are you actually financially ready to do this? And is this a major goal of yours? Because even if it's not the smartest market conditions, it doesn't matter. If you've saved well and you and mortgage rates are higher, but you're like, listen, I found this awesome house. This is perfect for my family, and we can easily afford this in our budget. We're not giving up. Like, we're not stopping all contributions to the 401k or eating, you know, ramen every night because we bought this house. Mm-hmm. Then that's totally fine. It doesn't have to be just based on market conditions. Like, that's what an over-optimized robotic person would do, right? And so I would say you mentioned high rents as a motivator for buying a house. But I would suggest doing the math and seeing how much more it'll cost you to buy a home in the current environment.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, because it seems like, and not just seems like, but rents have gone up substantially in the last few years. But I think this will do one of two things. It'll either make you less annoyed at what you're paying in rent, or you'll realize that the disparity isn't all that bad given the price range and area you're looking to buy. So either way, let the numbers and your personal goals like help inform your decision, not just being annoyed by a rent increase. And we've talked about this too, Matt. Rents are softening. If your landlord's trying to pass through a rent increase to you, and you're actually like, yeah, it's not a bad house. We wouldn't mind staying for another year and saving up a little longer. Well, you can push back. And,
At the very least, have a conversation.
I have had tenants do that to me recently. And guess what?
You're like, you're actually always pay on time. I never hear from you.
That's right. So I have lowered rent for tenants recently. Yeah,
there you go.
Yep.
A good renter makes all the difference.
It does. Yeah.
In the world. I do really like what you said, though, about him being annoyed, because I think that might be the case. Because what I didn't hear him talk about, and this is really interesting, but he didn't talk about wanting to put down roots, or he didn't talk about community, or even outgrowing the house, where it's like, hey, where we are currently no longer suits our needs. It seems that what he is annoyed at is the fact that he's paying rent when he owns properties.
Right.
It's like he's angry at the principle of the fact that he's paying rent. He hates the idea that he's paying rent. When instead he could be putting that towards equity.
Well, and there are a lot of people who would say, oh, renting is just throwing away money, which we would say not true at all. You're putting a roof over your head. And for the most part, for most people, it means you're going to pay less overall every single month because it's just cheaper than getting a mortgage these days. That hasn't always been the case, but it is now, at least in most markets.
But there's other benefits as well.
Yeah.
It's other stuff that you don't have to worry about. But it just sounds like he is more adverse to the idea of the fact that he's renting than the actual facts on the ground,
yeah.
Which is why I think what you said makes so much sense. Just run the numbers, and the reality of what you're faced with might help you to realize, well, it doesn't matter that this goes against every fiber of your being, Ray, that you're paying these dollars towards somebody else, if in the end it means that there are other benefits that you're receiving, and even potential financial benefits from renting, well, dang, that might be exactly what you need to keep doing. Maybe you don't necessarily need to rent, and that
might just change your tune about renting,
or at least slows the roll a little bit, which then allows him to then save up even more money to have on hand. Plus, all of a sudden, before he knows it, he's got 10% down, and it's just been a few months.
Yeah.
Maybe it's this summer, and he realizes he's got 10-15%, and that just gives him more time to explore different neighborhoods, maybe even figure out where it is that they want to end up living.
Yeah.
So I see no rush for him specifically, I guess, in the situation to rush out there and buy a home.
This might sound weird, but I don't think renting's never been sexier. It's just given mortgage rates and the cost of what people are asking prices for homes these days.
I would totally rent.
Renting doesn't seem insane in any way, form, or fashion.
Yeah, given
in most markets.
Given where we are, I would 100% consider renting if there is a great house that suited our family, because that, to be honest, the house that we're in, it's getting tight, man. It's getting tight quick. And
yeah, you totally rent if a big enough house can
absolutely.
The trouble is there's just like, that's not a big market.
Exactly. Ideally, I would rather maybe buy that home.
Yeah.
And maybe that would be the strategy. It's like, hey, I'll go ahead and sign a lease. And then we start having some discussions of like, hey, what would it look like for you to unload this house and let me just take it over completely?
And by the way, I just want to say one last thing. Ray mentioned itemizing deductions, but because of the much higher standard deduction,
that's right,
Ray, you even if you buy a home, you still might not itemize. Something like 90% of Americans do not itemize their deductions. Mm-hmm. So you might think, oh, subtly, that's another win, another check mark in the box of buying instead of renting, but it might not be. It's often oversold as a tax benefit, and it used to be a better tax benefit until the Tax Cuts and Job Act came along, but not many people, even homeowners, are itemizing their deductions.
Exactly. Yeah, it might be more of like a mental, just another sort of excuse. It's a good reason. Oh, yeah, and plus on top of that, then we'll be able to realize that benefit. But yeah, Ray, we wish you the best. And Joe, we've got more to get to, including a question about retiring early. We'll get to that plus more right after this. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, Matt, we got more listener questions to get to. This one comes from a listener in Washington who wants to know how to set his 18-year-old up for success.
Hey, Matt and Joel, this is Trent, a longtime listener from Seattle. I really enjoyed episode 760 where you talked kids stuff. You know, preparing financially for babies, 529s for kids, Roths for teenagers. Fortunately, I was aware of most of the items that you talked about and was able to take advantage of them. Well, my daughter turned 18 last week, and we received a letter from our credit union informing us that she would no longer be earning the early savers interest rate. This got me thinking about the other accounts and things that we should consider doing as she transitioned into adulthood. Over her 18 years, we were able to invest in a Vanguard custodial brokerage, which has about $73,000, and a New York State 529 that has about $100,000 through gifts from family and friends. She also has $12,000 in a custodial Roth account at Fidelity, which she funded by working at a dry cleaner since she was 14. Is there something I should consider doing with the custodial accounts now that she's an adult? What other things would you suggest she consider? I'm thinking of things like applying for her own credit card. She's currently an authorized user on mine. Switching bank accounts for better interest. Credit freeze. I would like to hear any other suggestions you may have for this transition. Thank you.
Matt, the only thing I didn't hear Trent say that his daughter had was gold bars from Costco.
There's so much I want to jump on because he said so many great things.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, oh yeah, credit union, we no longer get the early savers. We don't need you anyway.
That's right.
I'm thinking that. I'm thinking about the just the vast amount of money that Trent and his daughter, that they've been able to set aside. She is in such an incredible position, and it's clear that you've already done an amazing job at getting her started off on the right foot. Like, honestly, she's got more money than, like, the majority of folks who are twice her age.
That's true.
Maybe even more. And she's unlikely to have to take on any debt for college, for higher education, given that massive stash that's sitting there in her 529 account. And keep in mind that if she doesn't need all of those funds, that those dollars can be used to fund another child's education, or even your own or a partner's. Or you can use $35,000 of that money to beef up her Roth IRA. That's something that has started this year. You can read up on the rules, but they're pretty specific about the length of time that the account has to be opened, and you can only contribute up to the annual contribution limit. So it might, you know, take her like half a decade or so for you to pull this off. But just think about how wealthy, even more wealthy, that she'll be by the time she's 23. Most recent grads don't. I mean, they've got negative net worth,
right?
And she has the potential to have a lot more than that to her name.
No, a big positive one for sure. And I love something else too. He said that his daughter's been working since she was 14, and I think that's amazing. That's something you and I encourage regularly, not so that kids lose their childhood and are working 40 hours a week the day they turn 14. It's not that sort of mentality that I have. But I started working when I was 14, across from my high school, and I learned a lot. Like, I'm super convinced that working part-time in high school is invaluable from an interpersonal standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
from a self-development standpoint as well. There's just other things that you learn outside of the home.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of just teachers, now there are managers that you have to interact with. And so kudos to you guys on that. And now that your daughter, she's reached what's known as the age of majority in her state, that account can be transferred fully into her name. And there's not really anything you need to do. It kind of happens automatically. I just make sure that she knows about the accounts, how to log in, how the money's invested or divvied up, and then what the money should likely be used for. It's kind of like a passing of the financial torch here, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's saying, hey, listen, we've been doing this together for a bunch of years. Now you got this. And so my guess is she knows a lot already. She probably knows what to do because you've been really intentional, but this is a great opportunity for you to formalize it, maybe impart one last money lesson or something. But more than anything, it's a chance to let her know how proud of her you are.
Yeah, it's like a final little boost out into adulthood.
Yeah.
And again, you mentioned that she won't be earning that higher rate at the credit union anymore. It is a bummer because sometimes those different credit unions can pay a pretty sweet rate, but it's probably time to encourage her just to open up a high yield savings account anyway with one of our favorite online banks. Just check out the features over at Ally. I'm a big fan of them. Joel, you're a big fan of Discover. Yep. CIT, they consistently offer the highest rates out there. Even if she's like an Apple person, well, they've got a solid savings account now as well. But I would just push her out of the credit union for savings, but at the same time, maintain that relationship too, because when it comes time to borrow in the future, that credit union, it might have some of the best offerings around. Withdraw those funds, but keep whatever minimum is required. Oftentimes, it's just like an associated savings account with like $5, that kind of thing, just to keep that thing alive.
All right. So, what else do you need to think about? I mean, we think that you're thinking about the right stuff, Trent. I feel like you've been on the right path with your daughter for a long time, and it sounds like you've done both. You've done the teaching, and you've helped her do some of the accumulating, which is pretty cool. So I would say helping her freeze her credit, maybe that's a good idea. That's something that's worth pursuing. We'll put a link in the show notes for how to do that.
Yeah, do that after you go ahead and get that first credit card that you mentioned, to kind of help walk her through that and know how to set that up. And,
that's right.
And to obviously handle and wield that credit card responsibly.
And that might be one of those things.
Then freeze it.
That gets talked about later on typically is credit stuff. So you might not have done a deep dive with your daughter on credit, and getting a credit card and freezing credit and kind of having that discussion about the positive sides and the dangers of credit is really important. And then as she transitions into adulthood, I'd also help her think through budgeting so that those habits continue moving forward. It's incredible to be able to avoid student loan debt, to have money saved for her eventual retirement already too. but we want her to avoid consumer debt as well. And tracking is crucial on that front. So maybe it's YNAB, which is free for students. The You Need a Budget, that's one of our favorites. Or Copilot. Again, if you're like an Apple person, Copilot has a really snazzy app. Or even just old school Excel, like whatever floats her boat. But encourage her to track her money so she can keep moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Regardless of whether she's going off to college or if she's just moving out, she is going to have more responsibility, and she's likely going to have a whole lot more in it when it comes to expenses that you've likely been covering for her. So the ability for her to track her funds and to keep up with all of that, I think that's going to be vital for you to walk alongside her, right? Because, yes, technically she is an adult now, but that doesn't mean you have to throw her into the deep end and hope that she's able to swim.
You can
wade into the shallow end with her, and obviously that's something that you've done. But now that she's an adult, I think you have the opportunity to give her a peek behind the curtain a little bit and to give her some of the technical details as to how it is that things work. Obviously, I think you've set an incredible example as to like work ethic, how it is that we view money, like your attitude toward money. But now it's like you can get pretty specific about this is how we budget. Like you can share more and more information with them, not only because it's going to be helpful for her to learn how to do this on her own with her own money, but also because fact is, man, like she's always going to be your daughter, of course, but she's almost like with her being an adult now, it's almost like you're almost like peers. She's her own person now. Like she's going to file her taxes on her own. Most likely she's no longer going to be a dependent. And so the ability to kind of walk through life a little bit, almost like peers, I think is a pretty cool thing. It's not something that neither of Joel or I have experienced with our with our kids. But yeah, you'll be there. We'll both be there in a number of years. Something I'm certainly looking forward to.
Yeah.
It's a little scary because it's just like, hopefully we've done a good job up till that point. But it's sort of like what you said about passing the torch. It's
you find out when you kick them out of the nest.
Yeah,
I guess,
you find out. But this is just a way for them to learn some of the more concrete steps that they need to take when it comes to handling money on their own.
Yeah, you know, they talk about trust fund kids or somebody being born on third base. This is like Trent's daughter was born on third base, but in a different way, based on the intentionality his intentionality. So it's not like she's set to inherit billions, probably not even millions or anything like that. Right.
But the knowledge that she has,
that's what's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd rather be born and have to make my own way, but have some of those tools. Thanks to my parents. So,
absolutely.
For sure. So yeah. And I'm sure she knows she can always come back and ask questions when she's not sure how to proceed. Just make sure she knows that. Make sure you tell her that. And congrats to you and your daughter, Trent. All right, Matt, let's get to our next question. This one is about retiring early. And there's a rule about accessing your funds that can be a little bit confusing.
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is Tyler from San Diego. Big fan since the Poor Not Poor days. I have a question about IRS Rule of 55 that I haven't been able to figure out the answer to. It states that you could retire at the year you turn 55 and take early distribution from your 401k of the current employer's plan. However, can't you just roll over all your previous employer's plans into that current employer plan and just have that be your big lump sum at the end? Ideally, too, you could possibly take a sabbatical from ages 50, 55, etc. And then once you start working at 55, just roll everything into that current plan. Would that work? Would that meet the needs of the Rule of 55? Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good day.
All right, so Joel, Tyler said something that we haven't mentioned in a while, Poor Not Poor, which is what this podcast used to be called. And the reason I bring it up, obviously, Tyler, he brought it up first, but also over the holidays, I was cleaning out the garage a little bit and I found the box where we have our old Poor Not Poor koozies.
Oh,
it made them. I didn't know that it made the move when we moved out of the city. And so I might have to bring those up into the office and maybe we'll start giving away some of these vintage.
Yes, we should. We should mail some out.
Vintage koozies that say Poor Not Poor. It's the number one podcast of craft beer and personal finance. It's what it says on there. But Tyler, we appreciate you listening to the show for so long. And let's talk about the Rule of 55. It's a cool thing to know about for those of you who want to retire early. We love tax advantage retirement accounts, right? But if you want the tax break, you got to lock those dollars up for a long time. And so because of that, some folks who are interested in early retirement, they end up focusing more on funneling dollars into their taxable brokerage account instead, because those dollars are going to be accessible before the age of 59 and a half. It's understandable, but I do hate the idea of missing out on the tax break. Is it because of that you might want to take maybe more of a hybrid approach with a tax advantage account in addition to the brokerage account? But the rule of 55, it at least allows you to feel a bit more comfortable utilizing your workplace retirement account to a greater degree if you are interested in maybe kicking, maybe clocking out a little early yeah. when it comes to retirement.
I get it. Like, I'm, if you want to retire at 55 instead of 60, then the rule of 55 can be a lifesaver, allowing you to tap some of those funds. And the specifics boil down to this. If you turn 55 during the calendar year, you lose or leave your job. So you don't have to get fired. You can just leave too, right? And this rule kicks in.
You just quit.
You can just quit. Straight up walk out. You can begin taking distributions from your 401k without paying the early withdrawal penalty. You still owe taxes on the money that you take out, but you won't owe the additional 10% penalty, which is a big savings.
That's right.
And so while this is a fun little tax loophole, though, we don't actually think that most folks should do it. Why? Well, the longer you keep those dollars invested, the better, right? If you tap them too early, you're missing out on years of potential compounding. It's really only something that well-capitalized early retirees should take advantage of after many, many years of putting aside big bucks in those accounts. Basically, and I don't think you are, Tyler, I just don't want you to make this decision flippantly. If you've planned, some people might have just perked their ears up and said, what, huh? I can tap that those funds earlier than before? Great.
Five years early.
Totally going to do it.
Sounds good.
But if you've only got 100K in there and it's not...
May not get you very far.
And you're quitting your job earlier than you otherwise were going to,
yeah,
you might not have enough to last you for all those retirement years that you're going to need that money.
Yeah. And what you said, like you were mentioning the compounding that takes place, and some folks might be thinking, well, you're only talking about 5 years. Let's just say five. Or maybe even a few more years of compounding. But the thing is, those are the most important years when it comes to compounding. You don't become a millionaire in those first 5 years. Or I should say, most people don't. It's when you're really close to that and that compounding interest builds and that snowball continues to roll.
Yeah.
The size of it increases significantly in those last few years. But this is something, yeah. So I like how you approach that, Joel, because just because you can do this, it doesn't necessarily mean that you should. But that being said, if you have had an extremely high savings rate, you've got a large enough nest egg to start drawing it down before you reach full retirement age, well, then this is a fantastic tax loophole to take advantage of. If you're a How to Money listener and you've been listening since the Poor Not Poor days, perhaps, and maybe even really getting after it, it's worth taking a look at because it gives you the opportunity to get that tax break that's offered to you, but still have access to those dollars before waiting until you're 59 and a half. But to utilize a strategy properly, it does take some attention to detail.
Yeah. And okay, let's get to the super detailed part of Tyler's question. Basically, he's asking, can you roll over an old 401k into your current employer's 401k and draw down now on that much higher amount? Let's say you had one job for a decade, another job for a decade, and then now you're 53, getting close to this rule of 55 area. You've got a 401k with your current employer. Can you actually roll over those old 401ks into the new one? And then when you leave that employer, tap all those funds early? Yes, you can.
Woohoo!
So that's kind of crazy.
Uh-huh.
But yes, that is something you are allowed to do. So assuming that your new employer's plan is stellar, it's got low fees, great investment options for index investing, then it can make a lot of sense to roll over any previous 401k plans into your new one in order to have as many options available to future you as possible. Plus, it's just nice not to have to keep up with a bunch of different logins spread all over the internet.
But, exactly.
I'm also just a little nervous, though, Matt, if you roll all of your 401ks in and you think of all those funds as fair game, that, again, you're not thinking long and hard about a lot of those other future retirement years that you're going to have. Hopefully, Tyler's got decades after he turns 55 and decades after he turns 60. So just don't, I wouldn't think about it as like a slush fund, which, woo, now it's time for me to take the whole thing.
Yeah. It's good to know that is an option for when you do turn 55. But that being said, I feel like, I don't know, something about early retirement, I think it really appeals to you when you're younger. Because maybe I'm just speaking out of my own experience, because when I first discovered financial independence and all that it entailed, I thought, oh man, I'm doing this, baby. Like, I'm going to go after it real hard. But then, honestly, the older I get, the less important early retirement becomes, because I think, like, even by the time I'm older, I still think I'm going to work somehow. Yeah. Like, even if it's just like a part. Did we talk about this over at our house, or did we talk about this on the show?
Talking about some
of the different jobs that we might hold when we're older.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Like, I've joked about.
You're going to be a barista.
Yeah. I've joked about I'm either going to work part time at like the gym or pulling espresso shots or even being like a park ranger or something like that. Doesn't that sound awesome?
Sounds great.
Sounds so great. at least part-time, to be able to cover some of your living expenses to where you, it's not necessary to draw on any of these retirement funds earlier because you kind of have some of these smaller jobs to hold you over. Okay, so what about you? What's your quote-unquote retirement job that, to you at least? So I say those things not knowing what future me is going to like.
Yeah.
Right now, I say those things and that sounds appealing. I'm like, oh yeah, I could see myself as like a older gentleman doing doing some of those gigs. For you, what would that be right now? Do you
maybe
think?
A disc golf caddy. What do you think? Carry somebody else's discs, watch the pros play.
You just want to stand there and just chat them up.
Yeah, pretty much.
As opposed to actually throwing your own discs.
That sounds like something I'd be into.
So, Tyler, it's just some food for thought. I don't know. I think that's a good way of thinking about it. It's good to know that that exists, but I wouldn't fixate on it too much. But another detail worth considering, though, with the Rule of 55 is that if you made... So this is more, I guess, for folks who are in their early 50s and they're thinking, oh, man, this is about to become available to me. This is something I'm going to do. Well, if you made a significant amount of money in the year that you end up separating from your job, any money taken out of that 401k could be subject to higher taxes. And so because of that, you might want to wait until the following calendar year to start taking money from your 401k so that you're just not taxed at quite as high of a rate. And also, something else to keep in mind is that not all in this, just because the IRS allows you to do this, because it's the Rule of 55, it's the IRS's rule. Just because they allow that doesn't mean that all employers have to offer that. And so that's something else, I guess, for the early 50s individual who might be taking or considering taking a new job for the next few years that you're going to ride off into the sunset. Well, they don't have to offer those early withdrawals as an option. And so that's something that's some little fine print that you want to make sure that you have available to you if that's something that you want to consider.
Yeah. And it's also important to mention that even if you leave your employer at 55, you start drawing down some of that 401k because you can, you can still go get another job, actually.
That's one of the coolest parts of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So if it's a way to fund a longer sabbatical and you're like, I still want to work for another 7, 8, 10 years.
You can change your mind.
You can totally change your mind. And guess what? You don't have to give the money back in your 401k or anything like that. You can just have used it and no harm, no foul. No big deal. So it is interesting. You got to love the American tax code.
Exactly. There's all sorts of loopholes to consider. But Tyler, we hope that gets you pointed in the right direction, Joel. We've got a little more to get to. And this is going to be especially pertinent to any employees who may not have a 401k available to them through their employer. We'll get to that right after this. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, Matt, we're back. Let's get to our Facebook question of the week. There's always people posting in the How to Money Facebook group, like clockwork, regularly asking each other for advice. It's a beautiful
place. It's like they don't sleep or anything.
I know.
Like, what are these people doing?
Yeah, on the internet, nobody sleeps. Okay, but this one comes from Anonymous, who asked, I work for a small business that wants to offer a retirement plan. We have about 30 employees. Can anyone recommend how to begin a starter 401k under the Secure Act 2.0? Who offers a starter 401k? Thanks. And this is a great question. And the Secure Act 2.0 did make it easier for some of these small businesses to, in the same industry, to affiliate with each other to offer 401ks to their employees. But the cool thing is, even before that, there are great low-cost providers out there that we should talk about, Matt.
Yeah.
They've been around. They've kind of been doing this thing already. For some reason, though, they just fly under the radar.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't always that way, though. For many years, it was really hard for small businesses to offer competitive benefits. Honestly, it was just prohibitively expensive.
The administrative costs,
yes,
to give employees health care or 401k. It was like, guys, I wish we could, and I wish it would help make us more competitive, but the overhead is so severe that we just can't. And at least on the 401k front, I don't know about the healthcare front, but at least on the 401k front, that's more of an excuse than reality these days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if we're talking about a smaller business, they only have a handful of employees. Well, that was the trade-off that those employees had to make. No retirement account, no match. They had to just hope that their partner, that they had one, and maybe just be content going all in on their Roth IRA and then just maybe tossing some investment dollars into their taxable brokerage account like we just discussed, but no longer, because it's the democratization of investing. It's not only come to the individual investor, but it's also come to the aid of small businesses as well.
Yeah, and at least on my radar, there are two specific places that are worth mentioning, right? There are a handful of places that business owners can turn, but our two favorites are Betterment and Guideline. And so Betterment has a consumer-facing product. So if you're just a random individual, you can open up your IRA or taxable brokerage account with Betterment, and they've got a great product. But they also offer something for the small business world. And the products that each of these companies offer, they're actually pretty similar in a lot of ways, including on the pricing front. It's worth looking at both to see which one is most cost-effective for your specific company. But I would say Betterment has a slightly higher monthly fee, but a smaller per-employee charge. So that's kind of how it works, is there's typically a fee of $75, $125 a month, and then something like $6 or $7 or $8 per employee, depending on which package you choose. So, you know, run the numbers and check on out the specific benefits that each one has to see which one is a better fit. We don't think you can go wrong with either, truly.
Yeah, and don't forget Fidelity as well. I mean, yeah. Fidelity always has cost-effective options as well, and they've got a calculator where you can go on there, enter some details in, and they'll give you an estimate as to how much you should be paying, what you could expect to pay. And of course, this is assuming that, I guess, this person, anonymous person, asked. So they got like something like 30 employees. I'm going to mention Fidelity because, Joel, we've got our 401k set up through Fidelity.
Yeah.
But of course, I shouldn't say of course, you and I are the only two actual W-2 employees. And so therefore, we're self-employed. So because of that, we have what's called either a self-employed 401k or also known as a solo 401k. And there are zero fees. There's zero cost when you are opening one of those with Fidelity. So just something out there for all of the emerging solopreneurs out there. And by the way, if you work at a smaller business, if you work for a smaller employer, it might make sense to bring some of these services to their attention, because it's a way for even like a small business, anything from like 5 to even 50. But it allows these businesses to offer these competitive benefits and retain talent. But just like a lot of employers, they just don't know that products like this exist these days. They're focused on whatever it is that you do.
Right.
But they may not be
the product or service that you guys create.
Yeah, yeah. They're not pouring a whole lot of time and attention into HR, perhaps. Yeah.
They probably looked years and years ago and they were like, huh, this seems pretty really expensive.
That's just not going to be who we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's not a part of the fabric of our company. It's like, just, I don't know, it's worth mentioning that. And you don't need to be like a jerk about it. You don't need to throw your boss under the bus for not offering a 401k yet. But you just might want to mention, you know, that these sites exist and that they're incredibly inexpensive. And they might thank you. You know, they might give you a little bonus for showing some initiative. And I think your fellow employers, employees, they'll be incredibly thankful.
Yeah.
For you to bring this up as well, because it's going to impact their retirement, the amount of money that they are able to set aside.
They might carry you out on their shoulders like Rudy Rudiger in the movie Rudy, an all-time classic.
At the very least, they'll throw a pizza party
right
in your honor. But I think that's going to be it for listener questions. Let's get back to the beer, Joel, that you and I enjoy. How come you didn't finish your beer yet?
Because I'm feeling like trash.
Yeah, I don't blame you, dude. Although, but I hate it for you because this is such...
I can tell. I had a couple sips, even against the doctor's orders, and it is a delicious beer. Sadly, though, my palate is just not up to snuff.
I'm sure it's completely blown.
So this beer was lost on me a little bit, and that really bums me out.
This was, I'll say, this is a really, really good IPA. It's got, I don't know, maybe the fact that it says green on here, but the hops, it had a whole lot of vegetal notes, right? And so sometimes you get an IPA, especially a New England hazy like this, and it can come across as... sticky candy sweet.
And that's like too tropical.
Yeah. And that's not what was going on here. This had more of the sweetness that you get when you roast some broccoli on a roasting pan in the oven. You know, that kind of sweetness.
Oh yeah.
That's what this beer was rocking. And so I don't think I'm ever going to get tired of IPAs, but especially if they're making them like this.
Mm-hmm.
Rihanna, thank you so much for sending this one our way. And we'll make sure to link to any of the resources we mentioned during this episode up in the show notes, up on the website at howtomoney.com. And buddy, I think that's going to be it for this one. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out. As Joel collapses, your head just like conks down on the table.
Dude.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed...
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.